Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome all to another episode of FSHD Straight Talk Podcast. I am your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thank you for being here. You want to reach out to me, please feel free to do so at fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. Today, we're going to have a roundtable discussion. We threw out the question of ask anything about FSHD. And that episode is what we're bringing to you is these questions that we had all the way throughout the globe, to be honest with you. They came from places like Tampa, New York, and Australia, and Illinois, my neck of the woods. We had to represent Midwest, California, Vancouver, so many other places. And people brought their questions to us and our panel of Amanda Hill, Lucien Ronco, and Michelle Melian are going to come into this conversation and start answering some of those questions. What direction will they go? Of course, we'll always talk about what treatments are coming down the pipeline. What are we hopeful for? What are the promising things? What kind of things can we look forward to in 2026? I asked that question at the end and even beyond. The year ends, another begins, and I think there's a lot of questions to be answered. And thanks to Ann and Aaron of the FSHD Society, they threw out some blanket, hey, ask us anything, and you have all responded. And I'm so glad you did. If you have more questions, though, feel free to send me those, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. Always love to hear from you. Some of the takeaways and things I want you to hear or listen for. There's other areas that FSHD can affect your body that you're not really aware of, like sleep apnea, maybe in your eyes. You know, I have sleep apnea. We talk about that. Did FSHD cause that, or did something kind of a chain reaction of events? We tackle some of those questions. Amanda talks in some good detail about how Better Life can help. Have you been on Better Life yet? Maybe you should. I really encourage you to join in on that ongoing platform that leads to discussion and also makes you feel like maybe you're not alone. Better Life can help in amazing ways. Amanda talks about those things. The science, patients' viewpoints, all those things. Lucien and Michelle do a fantastic job in this episode, kind of representing what they hear and what they know is coming down the pipeline, some things that may help you. Sit back, enjoy, relax, listen in on some of these questions that have been asked and answered, and it might spawn some questions you may have. Of course, you know how to reach out. Please feel free to do so and send me those questions. Don't forget to rate, follow the show, all those things. Share these episodes with your friends, family. I think there's some inspiration within all these answers from our panel today. So without further ado, here's the discussion. As we tackled Ask Me Anything about FSHD here on FSHD Straight Talk. Welcome all to a great conversation, as promised, with a little bit of a roundtable discussion. We threw out this question, basically, ask us anything. And that can be dangerous sometimes, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun today. So let's go around the room a little bit here. And everybody, why don't you introduce yourself? Lucien, you want to start off and then we'll kind of go from there.
Sure. That sounds great. I'm Lucien Ronco. I'm the Chief Science Officer for the FSHD Society, having worked in FSHD for maybe about a decade at this time.
Excellent. Michelle?
Hi, I'm Michelle Melian. I'm a neurologist, subspecialty training in neuromuscular disease. I had the pleasure of working with Lucien previously at another company where we worked to develop losmapimod together, and I am now a medical consultant for the FSHD Society.
And Amanda.
Hi, everyone. Amanda Hill. I oversee our research and care programs at the FSHD Society. I've been on staff for about 3.5 years now, which is wild. Wow. And my husband has FSHD, so I'm personally affected by this disease, and I'm thrilled to be here today and be supporting my lovely two colleagues here on the screen.
Yeah. Wow, Amanda, 3 years. When you said that, I even went, has it been that long? Wow. Yeah. Wow. So yeah, thank you all for being here, spending some time to attack some of these questions that people brought to us. Anna at the FSHD Society helped kind of facilitate that. One of the questions, there's a lot of them, but one that seemed to stand out as maybe a good starting point, as we all discussed before we hit record, was one from she's Georgia, I believe is the person's name. From Australia, if I'm reading that right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So from across the globe we go. Her question may be a good starting point here. So what would be the best way to describe the pain I am in to a medical practitioner? I don't seem to have the right language to describe what I'm feeling so that I am understood or not dismissed. Like medical gaslighting, she kind of says. Who wants it? That's kind of a big
I'd
one.
actually start and then I'd ask Michelle to follow up.
Yeah.
And something I would say is that we've started to really understand from the whole body MRI, the imaging that has been done with FSHD patients in clinical trials and even outside of trials, is we understand that many muscles are affected, not just the facial muscles, not just the scapular, not just the humeral. And one of the ways that patients have started to talk to their doctors and to their insurance companies is to describe that imaging to them to show that many muscles are impacted by FSHD and that the pain that they're in, if it's not centralized in those key areas, but is in other portions, other muscles and other portions of their body, they can discuss with their doctors. There is data that shows that FSHD impacts many other muscles than those that are discussed in its name. And Michelle had some comments having worked with patients directly about this.
Yeah, so I mean, and we know that 80% of patients with FSHD complain of pain, and pain is a general term that people have many problems describing. Usually, the pain, as Lucienne had said, is focused on their shoulders and their hips. We don't necessarily understand the etiology of why so many FSHD patients have pain. In other muscle diseases, sometimes we can point to inflammation in the muscle and say that it's due to the inflammation. I think FSHD, we don't necessarily see that much inflammation in the muscle. Sometimes there can be, but not a ton of inflammation that we see as in other diseases that we consider inflammatory myopathies. So some of it may be related to inflammation because we know that inflammation does have a role in FSHD, maybe not an overarching role, but does have a role. But also the compensation piece. Patients living with FSHD, and Tim, you know this, is that you guys are a great adapters. So you do things with your bodies to get it done, whether it be swinging an arm up to get something that's maybe above your shoulder, or trying to get your body to move in a certain way. You're great adapters to do that. And so there is maybe a mechanical aspect to it. We do see, though, in the clinic when patients do come in and are complaining of pain, that it is responsive to ibuprofen, that many patients do respond to ibuprofen. Also, other types of pain medications that can be used are gabapentin, which are tolerated pretty well, and antidepressant medications like amitriptyline and duloxetine. And I think that to George's point, she all your physicians, if they're not taking your complaints seriously and are quote unquote gaslighting you, they may or may not be the right physician for you.
Yeah,
They should be taking
right.
you should be taking all of your complaints very seriously. And I think that you just need to do the best that you can with the words that you have to describe the type of pain that you're in. And sometimes when treating pain, it's unfortunately it comes down to trial and error. It's not like I can say, oh, just because ibuprofen has been, very effective in many FSHD patients, that that's the right medication for you. So it might take several trials of different medications until you find out what works well for you. The other thing I would encourage her to do is to think about incorporating movement and exercise into the regimen as well, because movement and exercise, if you don't move, which is very important. That can also be extremely helpful as well. And I don't know, Amanda, is this something that you see with your husband as well? Does he
Yeah,
have any
ask that.
difficulties with that?
Absolutely. He struggles with that as well. I know it's very common, others that we hear in our community locally here in Colorado as well. For him, he's got like a battery of treatments that he's found help him. So he does some infrared sauna, cycling workouts, and sometimes just more of a relaxing infrared sauna. And he gets regular massages and regular acupuncture. And I hear a lot of others in the community that find these kind of alternative type therapies that help them in addition to the medications. It sometimes needs to be that combinatorial approach.
And
Yeah, and I
I,
just,
yeah,
sorry,
go
Tim, I just want to
ahead.
add that these things, like even though it's not like coming from a prescription from your doctor per se, if it works for you and if it's not breaking your bank, do it. That's what I tell all of my patients. I say, if it's not hurting you, it's not breaking your bank, then do it if that's what works for you.
Yeah, and there's
Yeah,
also
yeah.
some literature that speaks to cognitive behavioral therapy having a positive impact on pain. This is something in addition to muscular manipulation, exercise, and medication is to consider a psychological therapeutic approach for pain management.
You, Amanda, the question that I wanted to ask you from a person that lives with someone with FSHD is sometimes you have to answer the question of what is it, or you might not be able to speak exactly to the pain because obviously you're not in your husband's body to experience it exactly or directly. But how do you describe it? If someone asks you, well, like, what is FSHD, or what do you mean? What's your go-to response?
For FSHD broadly,
Yeah,
like for kind of the pain aspect.
I think it's maybe a mixture of both because like I find that when I tell someone who's like muscular dystrophy, you know, one of the immediate questions they send back to me, well, is it painful or like how does it affect them? Well, to me, pain is like the number one. It's the mobility and then pain that kind of joins together. So I was just curious from your perspective.
The first thought that came to my mind when you started asking this was that it's like all consuming, if that makes sense. There's just like not an aspect of his life and our life that it doesn't affect, right? Like if you're always in pain, that affects everything you do. It affects how you think. It affects so much of your life. Similarly, when if you're losing mobility or function, like it's just there's never a day where it's not there and it's not present. And I guess that's sort of sad to say, but it is a reality, I think,
Truth.
that a lot of folks live with. That was just the first descriptor that came to mind.
I think you're spot on with that for sure. I think if my wife was here too, she'd agree with you. It's like kind of walks with you. I've joked and said a couple things. One, FSHD is just like a lousy roommate, and it just does not help you at all. And then the other part is like pain is just my best friend. It is always there. It'll never go away. It's just, and I don't know what that experience is like to not have it, and then to describe it from a patient's point of view to Georgia asking like, what do you say, like to a doctor, like, even when I try to describe it to them, I don't feel like that they're blowing me off. I just don't think they can relate. I'm always trying to search for something that's relatable that maybe they would understand. So I usually say, well, let's say you haven't ran for like a year and you're going to go run a mile. How do you think you're going to feel the next day? Oh, sore, had a time walking every day. That's it every day. And then it's a slippery slope. You guys brought up exercise or other medications. I find that if I don't do anything, it's painful to stand up. If I do exercise, it's painful to move. It almost like, I don't want to use the term it doesn't matter, because it does matter if you do exercise. It matters for many other things that help attack it to the best as possible. But I guess, it's like there's no avoiding it. Like there's no avoiding the pain. So you might as well exercise if you can, or move. We had George Pollock on a couple episodes again. He's like, for God's sake, just move. Even if you're lifting your legs in your chair when you're sitting, like anything, just move. Pain's gonna come anyway. So you might as well try to move your body as much as possible. So I don't
And
know.
the other thing, I think the other thing, Tim, is we always talk about the heterogeneity and how different FSHD is for different individuals. And exercise may help, certain types of exercise may help certain individuals, and in a way, it may not be the best for other individuals. So having a individualized exercise regimen that may have to change over time as the disease changes over time is something to consider. And the exercise for you that may not help, but may help others. And so thinking about exercise and thinking about different muscles and different individuals having a different level of disease, it really needs to be individualized. And something which Michelle has, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, Amanda.
Finish your thought, Lucien, please.
I was going to say we've talked a little bit about fatigue and how fatigue after exercise or even just after walking or moving or normal function sets in quite easily for folks with FSHD. How is fatigue tied to pain? We don't really know the answer to that question, but fatigue can be impacted by exercise and can alleviate, exercise can alleviate some aspects of that fatigue. And so I think that we, as well as others, do encourage people living with FSHD to find a regimen that they can carry out on a regular basis. Go ahead, Amanda.
I apologize. I wanted to jump in before we switched gears, not to elongate the point, but the other thing that came to mind for me on this question as we were discussing was finding maybe some tracking tools or ways to track your pain, that might help in the description with the doctor. So, I mean, I think there are like health diary apps and tools out there that you could utilize for this. I know in the US, where we have our Better Life FSHD registry, we have a tool that allows you to track your pain on a day-to-day basis. You could start to understand maybe how it changes with certain activities. Something else I think that is helpful, because as Michelle pointed out, we just don't quite understand where this pain come from, where the pain comes from. Participating in research and registries will help the whole community better understand that. So, for example, in our Better Life registry, we actually ask questions to try to understand the type of pain that folks are experiencing. And it seems like it's an interesting kind of mix right now. So I think there's a lot of ways that we can start to get at this as a community as well.
Yeah, I agree, Amanda. I think the Better Life Registry is invaluable, and if anybody can contribute to it, that would be fantastic, so that we can all learn together and answer some of these very difficult questions that, frankly, we can't just do a study on, right? These are things that we have to look at in the real world and how you're functioning, how people living with FSHD are functioning in the real world and how it's affecting them from a real world perspective, which can only be really captured through a database like Better Life. Just to go back to the fatigue perspective, and I think that we had discussed potentially also including a tracker for fatigue in the Better Life database. Lucianne had alluded to the fact that exercise can also help with the fatigue. And also, there was a recent paper that was just published that showed that exercise, moderate exercise, you got, and to Tim's point, you don't have to run a marathon or even a mile. It's just any sort of movement with cognitive behavioral therapy can be extremely helpful with relieving some of the fatigue. And so I think that though, in order for us to really understand and get to the bottom of some of these symptoms in FSHD, we really have to work on it as a community. And so getting in there and working on the Better Life registry or getting involved with other clinical trials is really important.
Yeah, for sure. 'Cause I mean, I've done the Better Life. I've been on there often. I'm a big, like, I love like the stats or the answers that you can, see, like, how are other people responding? Is very interesting. And sometimes it's, well, all the time, it's very comforting to know there's others that are responding very similar. You're like, oh my goodness, okay, I'm not going totally crazy here.
Not alone
Like,
in your
yeah, I'm
experience.
not alone in this. Like, it's rare that I've answered certain questions and I'm the one person that looked like maybe that. No, it's like it's very, the answers I have are very common amongst us, even though the disease is very exclusive to some degree or very unique, and on how it attacks certain people, there's still a lot of generalities to it, or kind of you're in this together. That's kind of what the better life makes you feel like. You're part of like that grouping. And of course the data does help. To Michelle's point, you know, it's like it does do a lot of positive things. With positive things to do, preventative type things, people have had questions in regards to that. We've alluded to a little bit of the exercise. Someone even mentioned hydrotherapy because of that gravity reduction. I've used water therapy, just simple like a pool PT. I saw a PT person that specialized in pool movement. I go to a gym that has a pool where I can do some of that similar work, or current pool where it has a current going through, so it gives me that resistance and like gravity help a little bit. So I guess the question I'm seeing with a common theme, without pulling exactly a direct question, is it seems like there's a lot of people asking, what's maybe the best course of action? This is going to be tough to answer because everybody's unique, but in your experiences, what's the best way to approach to try to find the right way to add an exercise or some type of plan to help?
I can chime in here. What I've advised my patients to do is to, if they would like, see a physical therapist, somebody who specializes in devising plans for people living with neuromuscular diseases would be best. But if they're not available to you, seeing a regular physical therapist is okay as well. And at the same time, I also think that we learn a lot. Actually, we learn more from people living with FSHD, I think, than you all learn from us. And I think that if there are, again, if there are things working for you, if you feel good moving in a pool, feel good riding a bicycle, things like that, I think whatever works for you and whatever gets you moving, I think is important. I don't think, again, that anybody needs to run a marathon. I can't run a marathon, or needs to be lifting, 500 pounds. But even lifting, 5 pound weights, or 2 pound weights, if that feels good to you, then do it. But you don't want to be doing things that are breaking down muscle per se. You want to be doing things that are more aerobic and that are endurance, really more like endurance based, not necessarily anaerobic type of activities.
That's good advice. Anyone else have something that they know in their back pocket that they, some secrets? No? Amanda, you mentioned though that your husband has some routines. Do you know at least one of them that you can share off of memory that he kind of does?
He likes and enjoys cycling.
He does the cycling.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I do the elliptical machine. It's as close to running as I can get again, you know, without running, because I don't run at all. So it's like I get it. Like you want to move and like the heart rate. Like I've had the studies done where how does FSHD affect my respiratory and things like that. And they've told me you need to push it harder, Tim. Like it's not affecting your heart. Like, your lungs are good. Your heart's good. Now, granted, this was like 10 years ago, but still, I'm pretty sure those things are still solid. It's like you can't forget about the rest of the care of your body. Like you have to, you know, what is still good, you have to kind of keep that way with health, nutrition, et cetera. Someone had questions. We're talking about, you know, preventative, yes. And then there's other outlier questions. Like they're wondering, is this attacking me because of FSHD? Like, why is this happening? Is this an FSHD thing? One person asked about, is lower back pain a normal symptom of FSHD? And then the other part that someone asked, do you see any connection between sleep apnea and FSHD? Those are just a couple I'm kind of pulling out. So I think the back pain for me is like maybe like what are your all thoughts on that? Because that's pain. We've kind of covered pain in general.
Michelle, I think you're the one to answer this.
I think lower back pain is a very common symptom in FSHD, just simply because of the way that your gait changes as the disease progresses. So again, I think that that's a very common symptom. Is it caused per se by FSHD? Again, I think it's probably related to the compensation and related to the muscle weakness from FSHD. And Tim, we were talking before this about like how things are, related to FSHD, but FSHD is not necessarily the etiology per
Right.
se. So definitely a significant contributor. In terms of sleep apnea, while sleep apnea is not necessarily described as a common symptom of FSHD, certainly I can see how sleep apnea could potentially contribute to it, in that, as your muscles get weaker, the muscles in your neck might be weaker, and so as a result, that could result in sleep apnea. And so I think that while all the symptoms may not necessarily be typical of FSHD, it's not necessarily to say that FSHD is not necessarily a contributor of that particular symptom. And as you've talked about previously, you said that your symptoms of sleep apnea were related
Right.
to,
Just how I move. Yeah. It's like I
exactly.
have sleep apnea where the stupid thing on my nose, all that kind of stuff. And I
Yeah.
was kind of borderline, they said at first, but I think it's gotten a little bit progressively worse. But I did all my, I always had a physical job. So all my lifting, athletic things, movements all went into my shoulders, neck area. Hence that area of my body then affected because of then it kind of tightened up the airway, so to speak, for the sleep apnea then to take effect. And so then I have sleep apnea. So FSHD didn't really cause didn't really cause sleep apnea, but if I didn't have FSHD, I don't know if I would have sleep apnea. It's a weird thing. It's like this like trail that might get you to a diagnosis, and if you look back down the trail, yep, probably FSHD might have had a little bit of an ingredient involved to have that happen, but it's not necessarily the root cause, I think, as like Michelle
Yeah,
said.
it's definitely a contributor,
Yeah,
and
contributed.
I would say definitely a contributor, but not maybe not necessarily the underlying etiology.
The kind of branches off to a question from Lauren from Tampa. She said, do those with FSHD have shorter lifespans than those without on average?
There has been a preliminary study done on this question, that there's not an extensive amount of data. There is a suggestion that there is a shortening of the lifespan, but it's not a profound shortening of the lifespan. And I would say that regarding this question, more work needs to be done. What is the cause of perhaps early morbidity or mortality? Those are the kinds of questions that haven't really been addressed with FSHD, and in a large enough study, that work has not yet been done.
I was told it's not life-threatening, it's life-shortening.
The data is seeming to suggest that. Yes,
Yeah.
but others
Right.
may have a different answer, but I don't think the data is good enough for us to stand here and say for sure, yes, and on average, it's this amount of time. I would say more work needs to be done.
Anyone else have
I think
info
on
on that?
average, to Lucianne's point, there isn't a profound life-shortening effect of FSHD. But again, it depends, because FSHD is such a heterogeneous disease, right? So if you're talking about somebody who presented with symptoms in adulthood versus when early onset, their course is going to look significantly different. So the youngest patients with FSHD certainly have a higher symptomatic burden, or I should say disease burden, than those who present later in life. So those with early onset disease tend to progress faster, tend to need assistive devices sooner, also present more with extra muscular manifestations of FSHD. So these extra muscular manifestations include high frequency hearing loss, problems with their eyes. Sometimes they can have vascular abnormalities and something called Coats disease, which can lead to the blood vessels leaking into the eye. They also have higher issues with pulmonary function, not necessarily because there's something wrong with their lungs, but because obviously, as we breathe, we use our muscles to breathe, and those muscles get weaker. And so they could potentially need more assistive devices with their breathing, be more prone to infections, things of that nature. And so I think that it really depends. And to Lucianne's point, I agree with her. We need to do more research on this to really understand the impact of FSHD on the lifespan.
Yeah, and we do hear from parents, mostly mothers of kids who have early onset that is moving rapidly, that there's a respiratory insufficiency. And they're very concerned about their children and that being the thing that actually ends their life. So we, as I'm just reiterating Michelle's point in a different way and bringing it back to young kids who get the disease early and have it move rapidly, there can really be a respiratory concern there. So it depends on the type of FSHD you're talking about. We know it's a continuum, but if it was very early and progressing very rapidly, you might be in a different situation with respiration than if you were an individual that had it occur later in your life and was more slowly progressing.
Fascinating. Yeah, it's scary when it affects the young people so quickly.
Yeah.
It's devastating.
It is devastating for the whole family.
Now, with this new world of AI, we had questions related to that. Someone specifically, Linda from Vancouver, talked about AI in, to me, this is almost a little bit of both, right? She kind of talks about AI. Is it going to be a potential cure generated to it with the advancements of AI? And if she also says or asks, will it be possible for someone who is now bedridden to rebuild muscle and become self-mobile with AI? So to me, I think that's always been the two-part question of a cure, and then can we rebuild? And I think she did a great job of asking, basically, can AI be a part of those things?
And so I'll take the first shot at this. So right now I don't see AI as being upfront in driving new cures for FSHD. We have very clear knowledge, genetic understanding of the disease, and these gene therapies that have come into the clinic now. I don't anticipate that AI is going to make them any better. AI could potentially make viral vectors that deliver a gene therapy better as we start to analyze that data and AI becomes involved in thinking about how we deliver therapeutics. So indirectly, AI could have an effect there. But in designing a specific therapy to reduce DUX4, for instance, right now I don't see a role for AI. As we think about someone who is bedridden and would like to become self-mobile, again, I don't see a role for AI there. As we talked about exercise being really valuable, but I don't see a great role for AI in driving those kinds of understandings of exercise and exercise approaches to becoming more functional. The community is bringing new therapeutics that should have some positive impact on rebuilding muscle and regenerating muscle. Those things are coming into the FSHD clinic. And together with the reduction of DUX4, there's a good possibility that a combination therapy that reduces DUX4 and that drives muscle growth, muscle development could be really valuable in that way. But I don't see a role for AI there. What I have mentioned in the past is that we have taken so many MRI images of whole body MRI images of individuals with FSHD, and AI is now being applied to those huge data sets to analyze that data, to understand in different individuals how different muscles are affected, and very specifically, where does the disease appear to be tracking in these muscles across a population? Where does the inflammation appear to be occurring? Where does the fat infiltration appear to be occurring? And so the way AI is helping us is with these huge data sets where it can analyze across as many individuals as we can put data into the system to understand what is going on with FSHD in each individual muscle, and then in sets of muscles, the sets of muscles that move your upper body, the sets of muscles that move your legs. So we are using AI to really dive deeply into the MRI data and really understand the disease in ways that we have not previously understood.
So it's helping. It's a component.
100%. 100%. It's very hard to analyze large data sets, and where we have large data sets, AI can be very important and very useful.
Yeah, I think AI is a great tool. I think that it really helps us to, as Lucienne was alluding to, understand these large data sets. One thing that's going to be extremely important as we move forward, especially with trying to understand the impact of these new therapies on FSHD, is looking at these large heterogeneous data sets and trying to make sense of them. And what AI is really good at is picking out patterns that we may not be able to see even with our current statistical analyses. AI is really good at taking heterogeneous data sets across a population and picking out those patterns that we actually haven't been able to see before. And so I think that it's going to be a great tool for the research community as well as for the FSHD community to understand how their disease is progressing, how a potential therapy is affecting them, and can maybe even be used to understand the progression of their own disease. And so I'm going to ask Amanda, because I think in the Better Life data set, I think that this is where we might be able to see some of those things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We're thinking about ways that we can apply AI within Better Life to analyze the data and also to pull out some of those patterns for participants for themselves. So it's not in there yet, but it's something we're really interested in doing and figuring out in the coming years. And the other way I will say that I think AI could be applied different than what Lucienne and Michelle just talked about is for earlier detection of FSHD and as like a screening tool for diagnosis. So we're at the society, we're starting to think about a couple years into the future when there is a therapy available for FSHD, it's going to be super important that we find people early and get them diagnosed early so that they can have access to that therapy and hopefully prevent as much progression as possible over that longer term. And so we're thinking about ways that you could apply AI to your electronic medical records to find patterns in those medical records that could actually mean you have FSHD, even though a doctor hasn't flagged that or you haven't realized it yet. An AI could maybe pick that up within that large data set. And there's other ways we could use this too. There's a researcher, Dr. Sabrina Sacconi in France, who's developing an app that can take a video of your face and just doing a couple simple facial movements can say, oh, you have FSHD versus not, or some other another neuromuscular disease. So there's ways, and that's a wonderful screening tool for especially places where access to care, access to genetic testing is more difficult. You can have a kind of a first pass with a simple app on your phone, just in a couple minutes, doing a couple facial movements. And they're utilizing AI to find those patterns as well. So I think there's some really cool ways this could be applied globally to find and diagnose patients and help increase access to drugs eventually. And Tim, if I just may add, Amanda's absolutely right. I think that medicine is really changing, and it's really wonderful actually to be living in the time that we're living in, because with the advent of gene modulating therapies, especially now in FSHD, I think that physicians are trained that when you hear hoofbeats, think of horses. But given where we are with where therapies are being developed, we need to actually start retraining physicians to when you think hear hoofbeats, you have to think of horses and zebras. And so, yes, because it's really important. And we're living in an age where now we have to intervene earlier. The earlier we intervene, we believe that the more likelihood that we are going to be successful with our therapies. I mean, so instead of treating once somebody is symptomatic, maybe we can treat even prior to them being symptomatic, which is something we're terrible at in this country, even for your more common diseases. And so trying to be proactive and to Amanda's point, it'd be great. And I look forward to a future when, there are potentially pop-ups in the EMR saying, have you thought about X, Y, and Z?
Man, so at least the future is bright with AI, the technology. My last question I have for our group is, did not see it within what we received. But my question would be, if I was writing in this, is like every time we get near end of a year, you always hope what's coming. Is there something better? Is there, new news? Is there something on the horizon? To your knowledge, 2025 felt promising. Not cure, granted, did not come. It wasn't there yet. But as we embark into the next year, from your perspectives, is there things that our community should be looking forward to? Is 2026 going to be a strong year?
I'd like to start, and I'll say that I'm very excited about 2026. And I'm very excited because we've seen some positivity in the therapeutic outcomes for Avidity. And there are other companies bringing similar but distinct therapeutic approaches forward. They may do a better job of targeting the muscle, they may do a better job of shutting down DUX4, but we've already got a proof of the principle that we can reduce DUX4 and that the reduction of DUX4 in a range of individuals that were in that clinical trial had better function. Their patient responses were better. Their MRIs may have changed. We haven't seen that data yet. So the success of one therapy caused many companies to become interested, to take different approaches that are similar in some ways and distinct in others. And those additional approaches are going to bring us more close to a successful or a series of successful therapies. It also puts us in a position, if we can reduce DUX4, of thinking about how do we rebuild muscle. And we talked about that once already. But there are a couple of approaches that are out there for regenerating and rebuilding muscle in addition to exercise, but there's also chemical approaches and new therapeutics that can help that. So I have to say that I'm very excited about the opportunities that are in front of us for next year and the year after that. And so I'll stop there and I'll give Michelle and Amanda, chance to say something as well.
I guess I'll go next. I'm very excited about 2026. When Lucianne and I first met, I believe it was in 2018, maybe, Lucianne, at Fulcrum. Fulcrum was the only company actually looking at FSHD. And since Fulcrum published its studies and actually provided a pathway for development in FSHD, which obviously has been improved upon by companies that have come on behind us, I'm really excited about the fact that I believe that something like more than 20 companies are interested in FSHD and developing therapies for FSHD, not only for knocking down DUX4, but also for looking at other ways to address the etiology of FSHD, as well as looking at adjunctive therapies such as muscle regeneration therapies to hopefully help to grow new muscle that is not necessarily affected by FSHD. So I have to say that I'm very excited to see the different technologies enter into this space and how they could potentially benefit this community and lead to improvement in the lives of people living with FSHD. I also think that AI is going to play a role, and we're going to learn a lot with it as a tool with this heterogeneous population. And perhaps maybe with AI, now heterogeneity won't be such a con and can potentially be appropriately addressed with AI. And so and I'm also really excited just about this community and how it continues to grow, not only in support from patients and families, but also from our industry partners and other advocacy groups. And I'm looking forward to being a part of that and supporting that.
And, to Michelle, kind of to the last bit of what you were saying there, what I think about too is for, our community of patients and families living with FSHD. For years, we've been talking about and working on clinical trials and drug development. But what I see in 2026, 2027, and moving forward is kind of a new and exciting focus about getting ready for treatments like We did that. We got the trials going. They're all underway. Lucien just shared how many companies are interested in working on developments. And we have, as the community, we have a new task in front of us now, now that the trials are rolling, to now get ready for the first and the second and the third actually approved treatment. And there are new things that we need to be thinking about and working on, especially when it comes to advocating to insurance companies and payer systems, to ensure that everyone has coverage and access to those drugs. Also advocating to the regulators is going to become even more important in the coming years. We've been doing that. We're going to continue it. So I look to the next couple of years. I'm very excited for the new ways that the community needs to be involved and engaged in this process to get us all ready for those treatments.
Yeah, and let's not forget testing. We need we need more people to have tests so that they are prepared to be in those clinical trials.
Genetic tests, Lucien.
Genetic testing. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. And I think that really the FSHD community can be an exemplar community as a rare disease community for other rare diseases that come that follow on too. So I think that other communities will be learning from us as we move forward toward those treatments and implementing those treatments and make sure that the community is ready.
Future's bright, then it sounds like to me as we embark into the next year of this. Thank you all for joining with these great answers, these phenomenal questions that we had. Really dove deep, answered a lot of them, if not all of them. I'm pretty confident. So thanks again for all your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Thank
Kim.
you,
Happy
Kim.
holidays.
You too.
Yep.
So phenomenal episode there, bringing a lot of thought, answering the questions to, some people that just are out there wondering what's new or what's going to happen or how do I explain this to my doctor? What kind of exercises should I use? Or what are some of the treatments? What are the things that are coming? A lot of questions. And I think we answered a lot of them. So we had questions that came from Tampa and New York and Australia and Illinois and Finland and California and Vancouver and so many great questions and amazing input given by Amanda, Lucien, and Michelle. So I'm really glad that they could take the time to join us. Thank you, Anne, from the FSHD Society, helping coordinate that of the Ask Me Anything episode of FSHD Straight Talk. So the questions, though, should keep coming. You can send me those at fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. I know that the new year seems to hit people differently. Some see it as optimism. Some people see it as an ending, what could possibly be in the beginning. Some might see it as, especially in our community, as, there was talk 2025 was going to deliver something. The year is ending. We're going to 2026. As I ended the questions there with my own of, what does 2026 look like? From a scientific point of view, from a patient point of view, asking scientists, people involved, boots on the ground, is there hope? Is there something happening? Is something going to come? I've said in a past episode that I had this year, hope can be dangerous. You have it, it can be crushed. How do you handle it? And it is. It can be dangerous in a positive way or a negative way, like anything else. I'm as frustrated as you all are, from a patient perspective. I have this disease. The things I do to try to keep fighting, I don't do enough, and I could do more. I have to have some accountability, and I think you all do as well. And then there's things that we can lean into our scientist community of this and say, you need to do more too and help us out. And it can get to be frustrating to feel like another year has happened and I'm still kind of in the same situation, or I'm worse, or what could the next year bring? Take more away. Especially those that have early onset. It's like the time is going too fast. The disease is very destructive. And I think as a whole, as a community, people that are in our corner helping us try to find a cure or treatment, those that were here for this conversation are right there with you. They understand that time is of the essence. And as another year passes and another one begins, you can go either way, an optimist or a pessimist. I ask that maybe you just kind of hold neutral and see what comes and be ready for either way. We had devastating news that something didn't work out so well in trials of a treatment in the past. That may happen again. And if it does, we need to be prepared as a community to keep driving forward. There's no other way to go about this except moving forward. If there is topics, things that you want to talk about in 2026, I want to hear from you. Please email me at fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. I plan on being here yet again for yet another year of the FSHD Straight Talk podcast. I'm so grateful for all you joining me throughout this year and all the years past. I've been doing this for quite a while, and I love every minute of it, talking to amazing people. I want to turn more stones over and find more people that want to conversate and talk about this disease, how it affects you. How are you changing your life better because of it? Or what things have you done? Adaptions. I want this show to continue to evolve into being about the community and how it can help. So please feel free to email me, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. Special thank you again to FSHD Society for helping bring this show each and every episode. Anne and Aaron of the FSHD Society, so grateful for you all. Grateful for the guests today, Amanda, Lucienne, and Michelle. Thanks for joining us. And thank you all for listening to yet another episode of FSHD Straight Talk. Take care.